Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is about how many Buharian Jews are there today and where do most of them live? In the Middle Ages, the largest Jewish settlement in Central Asia was in the Emirate of Bukhara. Jews settled there in Roman times, and the Buharian Jews are considered one of the oldest ethno-religious groups of Central Asia. Prior to the establishment of the State of Israel, the Buharian Jews were one of the most isolated Jewish communities in the world. Over the years, they developed their own distinct culture and language. Buharian Jews originally used the Persian language to communicate among themselves and later developed Buhori, a distinct dialect of the Tajiki Persian language with certain linguistic traces of Hebrew. Around 1620, the first synagogue was constructed at Bukhara city in what is now Uzbekistan. In 1865, Russian troops took over Tashkent, and there was a large influx of Jews to the newly created Turkestan region. From 1876 to 1916, Jews were free to practice Judaism. Dozens of Buharian Jews held prestigious jobs in medicine, law, and government, and many Jews prospered. Many Buharian Jews became successful and well-respected actors, artists, dancers, musicians, singers, film producers, and sportsmen. Several Buharian entertainers became artists of merit and gained the title People's Artist of Uzbekistan, People's Artist of Tajikistan, and even in the Soviet era, People's Artist of the Soviet Union. Jews succeeded in the world of sport also, with several Buharian Jews in Uzbekistan becoming renowned boxers and winning many medals for their country. Starting in 1972, one of the largest Buharian Jewish emigrations in history occurred as the Jews of Uzbekistan and Tajikistan emigrated, mostly to Israel and the United States, due to looser restrictions on emigration. In the late 1980s to the early 1990s, almost all of the remaining Buharian Jews left Central Asia in the last mass emigration of Buharian Jews from their ancestral lands. There's now a large, close-knit Buharian Jewish community in Queens, New York. They have their own schools, synagogues, restaurants, and cultural centers. And a museum. Aaron Aronoff is the executive director of the Buharian Ethnographic Society and Buharian Jewish Heritage Meros Museum. For several decades, Mr. Aronoff has transported embroidered garments, kitchen and farm implements, portraits and artifacts, and other examples of traditional Buharian Jewish culture from his native Uzbekistan to New York, where they're displayed in three rooms of one of the Buharian schools. We spoke with Mr. Aronoff about the Buharian Jews and this very special museum. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. Could you please tell us a little bit about the history of the Buharian Jews, where they came from and how they got there?
After the destruction of the first temple, 586 BC, more than 2,500 years ago, the Jews were in Babylon captivity. And we lived there for about 55, 60 years, and then Persian Empire emerged, and when Persian Empire conquered Babylon, the Jews were given a chance to go back to Israel and to rebuild their temple. Only 25-30% maybe of Jews went back, and most of the Jews went, instead of going southwest, we went east along Iran, Afghanistan, parallel to the Silk Road. Great Silk Road. And on our way we picked up the Persian language. That's why we Bukharian Jews speak one of the dialects of the Persian language. If I go to Iran and Afghanistan, I do not need any translator. This is our language. But for prayer, we preserved our Hebrew. And then little by little, we moved eastward, and then a couple of steps northward, we got into Central Asia, Turkmenistan and Bukhara. From Bukhara, we went to Samarkand and other parts of Central Asia, settled there, and lived there for centuries with Muslim people. Yeah, we had some problems because sometimes they wanted to convert us into, by force, into Muslim, into Islam. We resisted, although some of them had to accept Islam. And then the Russians came in at the end of the 19th century.
Wait, I read that in the 18th century, the Jews of Bukhara began to lose some of the practice of the Jewish religion, and that in 1793, Rabbi Yosef Maimon, who was a Sephardic Jew, went to Bukhara and to educate the Bukharan Jews, but then he sort of changed the tradition to the Sephardic tradition. Is that true?
I won't tell you that we were losing. We never will. We were very, very strict about observing all the religion. By the way, even during the Soviet period, the European Jews, the Russian Jews, they didn't observe all the traditions. The Bukharians kept, we had kosher kitchen at home, we went to synagogue, we had circumcision. The European Jews in Moscow, Petersburg, maybe 5%, 10% had circumcision. We, 99% of Bukharian Jews had circumcision. This, what you said about the rabbi who came from Tangier, really, he was very useful and helpful to us, but usually we kept our tradition.
So did you adopt any of the Sephardic traditions then?
I'll tell you one thing. The Sephardic, when I went visited my mother who lived in Miami Beach, Florida, and there was yahrzeit of my dad, of my father, and there were 5-6 synagogues around our home, and we walked very far. I said, Mama, why do we walk so far? She said, there is a Sephardic synagogue, so the melody of their prayer is close to ours. That's why we feel more comfortable in their synagogues.
Until the middle of the 20th century, the Bukharan Jews were one of the most isolated Jewish communities. And then there was emigration, to Israel and to the United States. I'd like you to speak a little bit about that, but also I would like to know if there was any difficulty when you emigrated to Israel, because I know some other groups that were isolated, like the Ethiopian Jews, they didn't really believe they were Jewish. Did you have any trouble like that in Israel?
We didn't have any trouble in Israel. On the contrary, those who immigrated to America, to Europe, they had problem like adapt to new. Israel was Oriental country, and we could very easily pick up the language. It was problem for our Jews to learn English. Hebrew they learned very easily, and they felt they were home. Even now, Bukharian Jews who go from America to... I'm American citizen. I live in America. But I wouldn't say I am American. I would say I am a Bukharian Jew living in the United States of America. And it will take long time when I feel that this is my land, this is my home. In Israel, even if I don't live there, I come there, I feel it is my home.
About how many Bukharan Jews are there altogether now, and where do most of them live?
I would say like about maybe altogether 14, 15 million Jews all over the world. 300,000 would be 250, maybe 300,000. The overwhelming majority of the Bukharan Jews settled in Israel, like 150, 180. And 55,000, 60,000 Jews settled in, came to the Western Hemisphere, America. We first settled in Queens. Little by little, we began to explore other parts of America. And even we went to Miami Beach, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, Phoenix, Arizona, San Diego, California. But mostly we are in New York and some in Canada too. Very few Jewish people are in Europe, Austria, and very few in Germany. And I would say maybe 2%, 1% left in Central Asia.
Can you tell us about the community here in Queens? Is it a very close-knit community, and what are some of the facilities that you have? I mean, you have this school.
I'll tell you one thing, very interesting. When we came to the United States of America, all the palaces, I mean their synagogues, beautiful synagogues, Jewish centers, were opened for us, and they say, Baruchim Abayim, welcome. We didn't go. Maybe you want to know why? We wanted to go to synagogue where the Divrei Torah is said in Bukharian language. And we went to basement, to garage, and we had to build our own synagogues. And Baruch Hashem, today we have many synagogues. And what I would say, we try to integrate into the American society, but at the same time we want to preserve our Bukharian Jewish identity. Cuisine, it's still Bukharian. Dresses, it is European, but during the festival, on festive occasion, weddings, bar mitzvah, we usually put on those dresses which was used in old country. So I would today we have yeshiva, we are the most active community among all other ethnic groups. Every night we have either yortzai, bar mitzvah, wedding, we have theater, we have museum, we have everything. And if you call a restaurant and say you want to have some event, they say all of them occupy 2-3 months in advance. You want to call the rabbi to invite him for your event, also. So active we are here in the United States of America.
So you would say that the community then is very close-knit.
We, exactement. Yes, we are very close-knit. And most, look, the apartments were expensive in Queens. They were cheap apartments in Bronx, for example. But we settled here. As the saying goes, birds of a feather flock together. We wanted to be together with all our community.
So what about the younger generation, the children? Do they keep the language? Do they keep the customs? Do they marry within the community?
The overwhelming majority of our children marry. Their marriage usually takes place between our own people, within the ethnic group of Bukhari. But it's okay. We welcome if our children marry American Jew or European Jews. It's okay with us, as long as all the Jewish traditions are very, very few. Maybe I would say 2-3%, maybe 5%. This happens assimilation, and they marry different nationalities. But the Bukharian Jews, the overwhelming majority, could keep to each other, to their own tradition. And by the way, they call New York is a melting pot. We don't like this word. We would like to say that it is a mosaic which consists of different colors, different parts. We Bukharian Jews make it different, like. So, unfortunately, the younger generation try to speak English. And we brought two languages with us. We brought Bukharian and Russian. Russian is still here. Bukharian, only my generation speak Bukharian, the elderly people. The younger generation usually speak English. By the way, I'll tell you one thing. We left Russia to avoid assimilation. Unfortunately, assimilation in America takes place in much faster pace than in Russia, because we lost our surroundings, atmosphere, like camels, Oriental bazaars, and the language when we spoke to each other, and all that. It is skyscrapers, it is no donkeys, no camels here, no tea houses, no Oriental bazaars. But it is beyond our power to stop it. The school, public school especially, TV, movies make great impact on our younger people. And it is beyond our power to stop it. That's why, by the way, I opened the museum. Because one day our children, grandchildren, would like to know about their roots, they come here and they will see. By the way, one of the philosophers said, I am not afraid to pass away. I am not afraid to die. What I am afraid of, to disappear from this world without leaving any trace. We want to leave this trace so our children will know about their history, about their roots.
Yeah, I wanted to speak with you about the museum. When did you open it and how long did it take you to collect everything that's in it? Because it really gives you the feel of what it was like living in Bukhara.
This is the only museum in the world, I would say. They want to make it in Israel too. They have a good collection there, they will. But I've been doing it, I would say, all my life because I like to preserve old pictures, old photos. And instead of going to Bahama or Dominican Republic, I go to back and forth to Uzbekistan, to old cities, and whatever there is, some things which remind of our culture, tradition, I try to bring it, or I pick it up from people here who brought it with them. So I've been doing it all my life, I would say.
Because it's really quite an ethnographic museum. You have all kinds of artifacts and dresses and all kinds of things that were used there for different purposes, and I think it's arranged in a very interesting way. Can you describe it to us a little bit?
As you see, we are very limited with space. It is school. Lev Levayev, the president of the World Jewish Congress, was kind enough to give me 3 rooms here in school, as you see. But the Bukharian Jewish community, by the way, I do not pay money for rent. He gave it to me and said his support gives us my financial and moral support to keep this museum running. By the way, we bought another building and there is a lot of space. We will build a new museum. Now the things are almost on a pile here. They need to be displayed properly at the new museum. Hopefully Bezrat Hashem will display them properly with mannequins, with all the things what we have.
Do you have any idea when that will open?
I wouldn't say open. Maybe you would like to ask me when we start the construction of this new museum.
Okay.
When we say open, when if it is something. They are finishing paperwork, and then we'll write in an ad the newspapers. And there are some people already who visited the museum. They say, Aaron, when you start the construction, we are with you. They will help me. I'm sure my people will help me to start the construction, and there we will display. You have seen only maybe 10%, 20% of everything what we are going to display. When we have new museum, there will be everything over there. And we want to build a dining room there, dinner. After you make a tour, you get a little bit tired. The second part of a tour will be lunch, where we show you all the Bukharian Jewish cuisine, the tandoor and all that.
Do you get a lot of visitors?
Many people mostly American people. American people at large show great interest. They want to visit our museum. We, thank God, we have something to show. We show them our synagogues, which we built ourselves. We show them our bakeries, our restaurants, our museum. Sometimes they visit our concert theaters. So a lot of very high interest people come and want to see the Bukharian Jewish community from all over the world.
Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
Well, I was very much moved and thrilled by the visitor like you from Spain, because I know what period of time when we lived there, before the Inquisition, I mean. And so the person, a lady who came from Spain and showed such interest for the Jewish, after 500 years for Jewish life, it is very exciting for me. And I hopefully you will show it or write about it so other people will know about it. And welcome for other people from Spain to visit our museum.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
If you would like more information about this community or the Meros Museum, you can write to the address on this page. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.